Tabletopped will start after the following messages.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick, from the Tabletop Podcast. When I'm not hosting, I'm thinking about ways to create a better podcast for you guys, and I think I landed on something pretty fun. In fact, if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/tabletopped and join for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a new episode a month that we're going to start putting out. In fact, we're going to be calling this one Wild Magic, I think, in that we're going to talk about anything and everything that interests us, not just TTRPGs, though there will be a lot of that. It is truly unhinged, and if you are a fan of the podcast and all of the hosts, you're definitely going to want to be on it. We're thinking of dropping these at the end of each month, so join our Patreon today. That is patreon.com/tabletopped. Oh, and there's going to be so much more coming out in the new year there, so don't miss it. Sign up today. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Tabletopped. I'm your host, Nick, and the world is being pulled and crumbling around us. That's right. Today we are reviewing Dread, TTRPG.
Is that why there was a shuttle service on the both of my train lines?
Yes, that is why. It's because pulled the wrong Jenga block, and now the MBTA has gone down.
I feel like the first Jenga block in every game of Dread is the MBTA.
Man, we should make that just an internal rule for every time we play. But who's here with me today? You've already heard him speak, but why doesn't he introduce himself?
I'm being summoned to do that. My name's Shane, but I didn't say that.
You ruined my joke. God damn it, Shane. And this you bastard.
I never.
This is our resident jokester and trickster.
Rio Grande. No, just Rio.
And we're today talking about Dread, a TTRPG that we played recently. And, one of our things we wanted to do this year is do more indie TTRPG reviews. So why don't we get a little bit of an intro from the GM who ran that game? We'll talk about how the experience was, the system itself, and all of that jazz. So, Shade, why don't you tell us a little bit about Dread?
Yeah. So Dread is... So it's originally concepted by Epidia Ravacol, and I apologize if I'm mistaken about any pronunciations there, and Wood Elf, developed by The Impossible Dream, came out a very long time ago. I'm actually trying to find the original release date here. Apologies. But it's been around for a good while is the point that I'm trying to make here. Well over a decade, I think. And it's a fun TTRPG that's very rules light, very story narrative driven. I'll say this kind of paraphrasing from the book, you need a Jenga tower.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. It did feel very much like in the same lineage as, like, I could see like Ten Candles being sort of a successor to this, a little bit more rules heavy in the Ten Candles case because you rolled dice and stuff.
While Shade was talking, I realized that in my head I was spelling Dread like Judge Dread and not like the actual word Dread.
You looked like you were about to laugh at us, and I was like, what?
What did Shade say? I realized, I'm spelling it D-R-E-D-D, and I was like, no, that's not... Correct.
Yeah.
So I'm off my ADHD meds for a little while, so my thoughts are taken back there.
We're getting pure uncut Rio.
You're getting unfiltered, unmedicated Rio as he lives and breathes.
We love him.
I love you.
So Dread, though, like you said, Ten Candles is a good kind of comparison here. It's very narrative. You really are coming into Dread. I mean, it's a game that's really trying to drive this idea of something bad is about to happen at any second.
Kind of symbolized by the Jenga Tower.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And every time you make, basically, the only real rule in Dread, as far as like I could really tell, was that when the players interacted or got into an encounter where
something could go either way or was a test of skill in some way, yeah. the GM could say, okay, that's a pull, and you'd go and you'd pull a block out of the Jenga tower. Jenga rules, just yeah. normal Jenga. And if the tower falls, your character dies.
Is there like a cross-licensing deal? Like no, if a game says that you have to have this other board game, what is the rules for that?
Actually, is it a board game or is it a block game?
That's fun. Yeah. Originally,
it's a tabletop wood building game.
That was a pitying. That's fun. Shut up.
It wasn't pitying. It was really more trying to move us along.
It's just the second thing we've recorded, and you and I just can't let Shade finish a thought.
Yeah, yeah. We really, like, both of our minds are going a mile a minute, and Shade's like, just let me have a second to finish a sentence.
It's the story of my life. No worries. So the they do. I think the original printing of this did not say that. Like, I don't think they could use the term Jenga for some reason, or I seem to recall like early recordings of like they wouldn't use Jenga as like they wouldn't name drop it. Mm. The book does now say Jenga, and it does say, you know, or a similar game, and they yeah. also offer some alternative types of games
like ooh, like Penguins on Ice.
Yes, like those two games.
Pull those little like those little strings out. Oh, your penguin fell.
Now I want to make a like a medical surgery game or something that just has the resolving mechanic.
The TCRPG.
But you definitely you need an operation game.
Yeah. So
it's the bomb episode of Grey's Anatomy. Anyway, Shade, keep going.
Let's just go down to Toys R Us and every board game from like Milton Bradley. We just make a TTRPG that's based off of that.
Rio, I have something really sad to tell you. Toys R Us is gone.
Yeah, but the toy aisle is still
there. You don't care.
Find the toy aisle.
Yeah, I mean, I would say you had the basics of it as far as if and this really, I would say this is something that you should be doing in most of your games. You don't need to roll for every little thing. Rolls should matter at your if it's a dice-based game.
Yeah, as Franco would say, every roll should matter.
Yeah, rolls should matter. But this is, the idea is really, hey, okay, cool, you've got a character who knows how to jump across a gap. Yeah. Anyone can do that, but can you do it while the place is on fire or the thing's chasing you? Cool, your character maybe knows Latin, and these are examples that I think are actually in the book, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. But can you read this Latin under pressure?
Like, how long does it take you to translate in your head or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you fluent
like
in
that?
Latin?
I don't know. Why would you want to translate under pressure into Latin
in
the first place?
If there's like a demon that's about to consume you and like the Latin is like how you send it back to hell or whatever.
I don't think he gets your joke.
Oh, wait, I don't get it.
I thought you did. Like under pressure, but in Latin.
Dun, 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 dun.
Kill me.
I hate these people. Okay, sorry.
So
I took that as a real question, and I answered it.
And you should have. It was like.
All right, let's keep moving.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the cool things I will say about this book is it does say, hey, you'll need this for like a minute, and then after a while, you'll never need to look at this book again.
Yeah.
So pass it on to someone else, and I thought that was kind of nice.
Like the ring.
Yeah.
Or herpes.
Yeah, exactly.
Either one. Yeah. Can we talk about the character creation for a little bit?
So character
creation. Because that's like a little bit more intensive in that you just have
Did
lots
we
of
create
questions.
Characters?
Yeah. So we, I'm going to couch this real quick. Our version, what we did for Dread is we have been... I run an annual game where we get to play with like high level 5e characters in a kind of arena situation. It was something that I put together ages ago because we were playing
Ages ago.
Yes, actually we are coming up on our fifth year of the SS. Mm-hmm. We were playing Dungeon Mayhem. And then after playing Dungeon Mayhem, we were like, oh man, wouldn't it be cool to do it with our characters? I was like, I can do that for you, no problem. And so we did, and it became kind of an annual thing. And when it's since evolved into a, okay, cool, what if we did that, but it's like a monthly adventure, and we're going to do kind of a West Marches thing. Mm-hmm. So the idea is just episodic narrative kind of thing. And so we had 5e characters that we essentially ported into this. The adventure, I didn't push really hard on the polls. Mm-hmm. Really, in a good game of Dread, you should be pulling from that tower every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I wisely kept my mouth shut for a lot of that.
you were quiet.
So that Timothy would not have to pull from that. And the twice that I did it, it was nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
Tibbity is a cute little baby boy who's just trying his best in life. I was like, he's not going out in this game. Not because of a Jenga tower.
That's an interesting thing as well, and I should have maybe clarified this and pushed for more polls. Being removed from a game of Dread does not have to be, because Dread is great for one-shots, but it is a game that can be a longer going campaign, and your characters, when they are removed from play, do not have to die. There are other things that can happen, and there's a whole list in the book of these things.
You could be knocked out.
You could be knocked out. Yeah, and
you could be sucked
things.
Into a dreamland.
And... Yeah, exactly. In the case of this game, you were going to be brought into that little chest that the child had put all of its fears in.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Mm-hmm. We got to see that later when whatever his name.
Tibbity.
No. There's this NPC that you kind of generated into the world.
I just called him
the, because it's like the Jim Harrison or something like that.
The Jim Harris. Yes.
And
but his first name is the, and his last name is Jim Harris.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that guy got eaten by one of the monsters, and you find him safe and sound inside the chest later.
I thought that you had gone full like metal. Album cover shade when we were trying to pop the box back open. It was like a box.
Just yellow flag on this because recently I was listening to a podcast where the people like mentioned a game that they were playing in only like part. Could you just give a rundown of the story?
Yeah. What happens?
So our listeners can actually know
what we played. Very valid. Yeah. So our group was in a world that's kind of like Sigil, where it's a very multiplayer world. People from all sorts of realities and worlds come together in this place. And the characters, after a night of exploring this fun city full of every possibility and opportunity they could ever find, are heading back towards home. It's very late at night. And they suddenly have this psionic feeling of, in their mind, they can hear telepathically a small child that is begging for help because there are monsters under the child's bed. They can feel a psionic pull. They go to investigate because they're big damn heroes. Why wouldn't they? Even though every step towards this call feels like they're going to die. Mm-hmm. And they reach an apartment that looks pretty dilapidated. They see there are a few lights on, including one light that's a little bit different from the others. Up on the top floor, they go in. The doors open automatically before them. They go in and then they close automatically. They get the sense that they're trapped in here. They fight their way kind of through the apartment, encountering terrifying things or things that aren't meant to be terrifying, and clues along the way, until they eventually find that there was a small Kuatoa child who had been left in the care of the apartment's buildings.
He had whiskey in his coffee.
Yeah,
I will say, listen.
That's fair.
That's just how you get through a day. That's not drunk.
Functional. Yeah. And the apartment complex is well-meaning.
Yeah.
Night watchman
and
security guard, and he had read one of the Kuatoa parents' books, which was a Stephanie Duke book. Stephen King was the idea here. Collection of short stories.
I just got that.
Yeah.
Duke. Yeah, I didn't get that until Shay was like, yeah, Duke, D-U-K-E. And I was like, oh, I was thinking D-O-O-K.
Yeah.
Like a stupid idiot.
Spelling stuff is hard in your head.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I get it.
Anyway, had read a collection of short stories of the child. The child got afraid, and because Kuatoa in like basic D&D 5e kind of stuff can summon gods into existence, this child began to summon its fears into existence, more or less, and those were the monsters under the bed.
And just like a little rose for you, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the dungeon being an apartment complex.
It was,
and I really liked that we didn't have to, like, you were like, these are the floors that are important.
Yeah.
By giving it that way, we'd have to explore every single floor.
Yeah, so there were lights on certain
big
floors.
Thing. It's like, it's not until the 10th floor of this 12th floor that we have to really worry about stuff. But it was still like, yeah, you're high up.
Yeah.
There's like weird stuff below you, but this like this is your three floors. And I was like, oh, this is good. This
and
is
also like going like up the fire escape, like having the thing of like it's very dark looking down. You can't, but you like you're starting to hear stuff down there or above you or whatever. It was also very cool because it kind of like limited the range of your escape path and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. I'm
glad you liked that. I also and I intentionally chose this apartment complex
because it looked like a Jenga tower.
Because it looks like a Jenga tower. I made it so that there were three windows on each side. So like it was meant to be very.
Oh, I also missed that.
yeah.
To be honest, this was like the first day I was off my meds. So.
yeah, it was good. It was a lot. Anyway. So one of the things that happened to an NPC, they came across the first room that they knew they had seen lit up outside, and inside they could hear Pop Goes the Weasel. Essentially, there was a child's bedroom in here, and there was a Jack in the Box, and it was just constantly cranking on its own.
And
NPC decided to check it out, got pulled in, and then ground up inside the Jack of the Box. The Jack that
and
came
out. And we did
out,
it accidentally. We were like trying to crank the thing so that it would open back up. We could get the guy out. And it just started like weeping blood. And we're like, whoops.
But that was all just to add to the horror. The guy was perfectly fine because the thing that's happening is this child is going through therapy and packaging its fears. I stole this from Doctor Who. Season 6 of the new Who. With a Matt Smith.
I
love New Who. It's so chocolatey
and
delicious.
And a child is just packaging its fears into like this little box that says like all the things I'm afraid of. And so like all the missing dogs, the missing parrot, everything was packaged inside of that box. And as soon as you break the box, everything's released.
Yeah.
And there are no real monsters because the kid's making them.
You could have really had an R.L. Stein moment of like the camera like pushes in after we've saved everything into the box and you see like a small the Jim Harris like in the box being like help.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure he was nice and safe for everyone and not because
we
like,
need our insurance adjuster.
So that's kind of the basic concept, but we were gonna talk about character sheets. I feel like maybe we should do that after this break.
Great.
Hi guys, I'm Matt and I am half of Roleplay Chat. Roleplay Chat is a podcast and passion project from two game masters who can't stop talking about role-playing games. We talk about games like Dungeons & Dragons, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the Fate Core system, Call of Cthulhu, and many more. In Roleplay Chat, Chris and I take deep dives into tabletop RPG subjects. We touch on topics ranging from something as simple as traps all the way to abstract concepts like pacing or engagement at your table. Chris and I take you through unscripted chats, showcasing our roleplay strategies, providing you with concrete tools in the aim of improving as a player or as a game master. Our bi-weekly show can be found wherever you podcast. Just look for Roleplay Chat. That's R-O-L-E, Play Chat.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking about Dread, the TTRPG, where you pull blocks from a Jenga tower. Very fun. Also, we didn't really talk about it, but it is sort of billed as like a horror thing.
Yeah.
You can use it any way you want. Like, I could see it, you could use it as like a high fantasy, like magic.
100%.
Every time you cast, you pull a Jenga tower block or whatever. You could totally use this in any way, but it is sort of billed as a horror thing. So we're kind of talking about it along that line.
It's just because of the feeling you get when a tower's about to fall.
Yeah, it's very anxiety provoking.
But I mean, I think that that's a great point as well, because like should fighting feel like I'm having a great moment? I've been in some scrapes when I was younger.
Very stressful.
They're stressful. Like there's a I don't want to be injured and I don't want to injure this person too much, or you know, oh god, this is life or death kind of situation.
That could be a fun way to resolve PvP combat too, is like every turn you like are pulling a block and it's just like
a whole section in the book
really
about that.
That's amazing. We'll get to that, but we're talking about character creation. So the way that Shade did it in this particular one is that we were bringing in characters from a sort of D&D campaign or like
the ongoing anthology
an anthology game we're playing. And so we basically, instead of creating a character, is that we answered a list of questions that were like Dread specific. But I don't think I have a firm understanding of like what is required from a Dread character, so why don't you kind of lead us through that?
So you want to generate. So there should be a fair amount of prep, but it's not like it's not. Unlike 10 Candles, which tells you don't prepare anything, you do want to have a story prepped for Dread. And part of that is building your questionnaire. So the questionnaire is going to be the character sheet. And that questionnaire needs to have questions that will tie into the story in some fashion, but also give your players a chance to really dive into who these characters are.
So yeah. The questionnaire is different each time you play.
Yeah, although you can use the same questionnaire. So I mentioned that Dread is great for a one-shot, but you can do multiple games. You could do a whole campaign with Dread. And you could use the same questionnaire because you theoretically are updating that questionnaire as things happen. So,
if they survived like a really traumatic experience, then maybe that's the big fear that you change your big fear to or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that. Or, you know, I used that example and it was in the book about like Latin. Can you do this under pressure? Maybe that was something that wasn't established on the character sheet or the questionnaire originally where, oh, does this character know Latin? Well, they were a classics major in college. Maybe that was something that was on your questionnaire for some reason. So presumably they should, but is that what they do now? No, they're in sales, so they're not using that. Speaking from real world experience. you know, so where can we go when, you know, maybe that poll determines, okay, yeah, they definitely know their Latin still. So that's something you can really mark on your sheet is like knows Latin, and that can come in useful later. So you can evolve the questionnaire. The questionnaire, though, is going to be dependent on the overall story you're going to want to tell.
Yeah. Is there like a set of questionnaires that the book gives you?
It
or
does.
Can you make your own? Or do you want to make your own?
It really wants you to make your own.
Yeah.
It does give you like sample stories and questionnaires that would go with it. There, I'll pull up real quick. There's a question of character, chapter 3. So topics that could be addressed in a questionnaire. How do you behave? How do you look? How do you relate to the other characters? What are your fears? What are your habits? What are your hobbies? What are your strengths and weaknesses? What do you do for a living? What do you own? What gives you courage? What is your past? Things like that.
Yeah.
But they also push you to, or they advise that you do intrusive questions. Mm-hmm. So
as somebody who just received this, there was a couple of them where I was like, I have fucking no idea. Like, this is like something that I have to think about.
Yeah.
It's something that like, as a day-to-day person, as a real life person, you would probably still have to sit down and think about this for yourself as well.
100%.
Like, one of them was like, it was like, what does your character like truly fear or something like that. Pretty basic question. And you could answer that with like, oh, spiders, like Indiana Jones hates snakes. Like that's the same thing for me. But like I sat down and thought about it and I was like, oh, it's going back to where the reality where this guy was pulled from. Like he doesn't want to do that.
I regretted that question so much.
Really?
Well, because
you what that question?
I regretted it.
Regretted it.
The phrasing of it.
Yeah.
Because I realized, because even I went ahead and answered it for my own character, because this is an anthology game where presumably I may not DM sometimes, so I'll have a character or five as well, and I'll get to play one of them. So I did it for one of my characters, because I was like, it's only fair play. What if they asked me that? And Sean and Steven actually did ask me one of the questions. I was like, oh, yeah, it's this. And I answered it for that character. But I asked about the fear, and all of you gave me the most abstract fucking answers imaginable.
Because Tibbetys was what? Isolation?
Yeah.
Being abandoned?
And like probably what you're looking for because of this like fear thing was like snakes or something.
Yeah. And I realized, oh shit, I should have said, what is your phobia? Because that's a more like certain word. Like
it's specific.
Well, hey, let's go around real quick. My phobia is cockroaches, disgusting little creatures, and I'm so glad that I've only seen two in my time, my 14 years in Massachusetts. I've only encountered two, and they were both in like places where I might expect to see them. Whereas every other place I've ever been in the continental United States, you just find them places and it's like, holy shit, exist. Why? Ugh, I hate them.
For me, bugs, don't like bugs of any kind. To the point where when I was a kid and a fly was flying around, I would like dive out of my chair to get away from them. Do not know where that phobia came from, but I'm a little bit better now, but...
Yeah, I have a note on you that says bugs under the skin.
Yeah.
And related to like your biggest fears.
Oh, yeah, because you asked me this once and I was like...
Little book of fears.
Because like the thing is like to see something like moving under your skin, oh my God, that would be so gross.
Oh, yeah, no, that's gross.
I would hate that. But Rio, I can answer this for you just like as a person. And tell me if there's something else that's more so, but you hate the water. You hate the ocean specifically.
I hate being submerged.
Yeah.
And I guess it's like the, any sort of water that's more than like ankle deep, I don't want to be involved in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can feel like, I love swimming. I've been swimming since I was a kid. I really like-
You have no sense of self-preservation.
Stinky boys.
Stinky boys. I like lakes. I like the ocean. Anytime I start swimming in one of those two things that I can't see the bottom anymore, like, and I can't touch the bottom, I start getting, like, my brain goes nuts. Like, once I was like, oh, I bet I could swim across this, like, part of this lake to get to my...
Anything could be underneath
you. Yeah, it is. Like, my brain will start going, like, nuts. It'll just be like, there is a huge mouth, like, slowly coming up. And I'm just like, man, that sucks.
That's not even the thing I fear.
Really?
In the water,
Is it drowning?
Drowning, yeah.
Yeah, mine's drowning. Mine's the fact that the human body is not built to exist in that environment.
Yeah.
And anything you encounter in that environment
is built.
Well, for me, it's just like for me, it is definitely, because I did swim club and stuff when I was a kid. I am not a stinky boy. If you take a big breath of air and like you're supposed to be able to float, I know that's not true for you, Shane.
Not in the slightest.
But for me, it's like, even if I'm exhausted, tired, I feel like I could, in most like calm conditions, just float, and which is when I'm swimming, to be honest. Like, I'm not swimming in some crazy choppy water or whatever. I could just float until I feel better and then keep going. I just hate the fact that I don't know what's underneath. It's the unknown. It's
one of the algorithms that my Instagram feed has given me is things appearing out of the water, alligators just popping up next to a canoe, or something like, oh, look at this fun little fish, and then you just see the shark just appear out of nowhere, and I was like, why? This is obviously I look at it because it's what I fear, and I don't know why you're drawn to the things that you are afraid of.
That's how I got married. I love you, Jackie. But you terrify me.
But in the water, things can just pop up and just be there, and you've never seen them before. And they all have teeth and are huge.
Yeah, so in Dread, I think that there's probably...
Oh, yeah, we're talking about a game.
There's probably a mixture that you probably need to do with these, where it's immediate things you can act on and also bigger character questions.
Right.
But if you go two one way or the other, it's kind of hard to act upon them.
Yeah.
Though I would say the abstract ones give a general sense of character, like your character makeup, I guess. So you can plan sessions and stuff out with that and create situations. But in the one that you were doing, we didn't give you a whole lot to work with way.
And I say I regretted it, but you all did a great job. And one of the things that the book really pushes and that they tell you as the game master to push is to have a why after that question. So what's your favorite food? Why? And make the players kind of evaluate that consideration
that
a little bit more.
Yeah, I love crab rangoons. Yeah. Why? Because I love the crunch and then the cream.
Yeah, and that's a great answer. So the questions, I put forward the following. If your character had a more typical life and hadn't been led to a life of paranormal adventuring, what career would they have pursued and why? What hobbies does your character engage in when not adventuring?
The career thing was so weird for me. I have to really think about this.
I remember answering that question.
Personal assistant.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because I was created.
I was basically a cattle rancher or something.
Aww.
And my character is very much inspired by tropes from Red Dead Redemption. So I was just like, what would these characters want to do? They would want to live out under the stars. They want to have no authority.
Oh, that'd be a fun, I want to do an Oregon Trail Dread.
Ooh,
now.
That could be really fun.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Especially because it's like fording the river is like a pull or whatever. You know what I mean? That could be very fun. And like, especially it works because you start out with a bunch of supplies, but as in like a bunch of blocks that you can pull. And then as you go on your trip, you start running low on stuff and you have to pull more. That's like, ooh, that's good. Ooh. I like that, Rio.
Yeah, I love that. Some other questions. What hobbies does your character engage in when not adventuring? How long have you been doing these hobbies and
whittling.
Why? Yeah. Whittling, I think you had
collar making.
Urban exploring.
Hiking and socializing many years, I think.
Oh, right, because I found people that I could help, and I just was like looking for the source for it. I was just like, oh yeah, the hiking and socializing, those would be his hobbies because that's just what he does.
Yeah. What's your character's been biggest regret and why? why did you take up this current path of adventure that you've been following? Why did you leave your old life behind, and what do you hope to gain from this path? What's your greatest weakness and why? What's your most cherished memory and why? What's your character's greatest fear and why? And then what secret does your character keep from the others intentionally or unintentionally and why? And man, there are more questions.
You got to stop reading questions.
Yeah. This was the thing about Dread. And let's like kind of switch into our experience of both running and playing in it. The thing that I
only did the one.
Yeah. The thing that I kind of wish is that I kind of wish that the players could call for a pull sometimes too to help make those decisions. Because there was a couple moments where my character was like, so my character biggest like regret was like not being able to save someone in his original reality. And came across this person, though maybe a zombie, maybe a monster kind of thing. And I as a player was like, immediately he would be like, bang, because this is a monster. He knows that she didn't get out. But then I was like, he didn't see her disappear. And like if Alice, my fiance, like I was in a different reality and I went around a corner and I saw her for a second, I'd be like, well, I'm here. How do I know she's here? And like in a way, I wish I could have been like, could I pull to make this decision? Like
that. You know, and that's something that if you had asked, I would have said, absolutely.
Well, it occurs to me later, right?
Yeah. And I think that, like, that's one of the things. There are, you can voluntarily opt out of a poll and just fail, and then you're out of the game, quote unquote. Or you can.
Why would you do that?
Because if narratively, if it makes sense, you know?
I would never choose those.
You did that with 10 Candles, though.
Yeah, you did, remember?
Which was a really powerful moment.
It was great. Oh, she was awesome. Maybe one of my favorite of your characters.
It was a very good character.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Listening to that voice, Logan, I was like, what was I doing?
It was fantastic.
You guys listen to that for an hour and a half?
It was so good.
It was great.
And then you could also push the tower over.
Yeah, you could just choose to break the tower.
Yeah.
Which I guess this is the interesting thing between those two. You could choose to fail.
So that's actually the one. Sorry, you choose to fail and you don't leave the game, but you failed whatever happened.
Yeah.
Now. But you could push the tower over and leave the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the tower resets if you do that. So it's also like a point of personal sacrifice if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. You're like a heroic last
thing. Yeah, exactly. This is the thing that I would say about this game, though, is like you were saying, you should probably be pacing for like a pull every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
The thing about Jenga is that the first like 5 to 12 pulls are relatively safe.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like as a GM, you kind of want to burn through those somewhat quickly because otherwise you're getting to the meat of your story without any consequential pulls.
Yeah.
But which is the one of really my only gripe with the game is that you know you're kind of safe for the first hour of the game, which is good pacing wise, but at the same time, it's sort of like I as a GM would be like these. Going back to Franco's thing of like every role should be important, every pull should feel important, and the first 5 don't because you're pretty certain you're not going to topple the tower.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, but you could just maybe start the tower like, hey, everyone take 5 pulls.
I guess you could. Yeah, you could just start with like a little bit more of an unsteady tower.
Yeah.
I mean, like we hack all of our games. Like we could definitely do that.
Well, that's actually addressed in the book as well.
Yeah.
You can start off with more tense situations. You can, if you have less than a certain number of players, you should go ahead and make some pulls in advance.
You know what would be really interesting actually is to take the very bottom and just have one thing that it's on. So every pull is like you have to just. It's like you can still get the pulls out pretty easily, but you have to be really like gentle.
You just have
and,
that
like,
one middle block at the bottom.
So that it's like that's, easier to tip.
I don't think you could do the tower on one block.
Oh, you can.
Oh, you absolutely could. I think that
it's
that could
be. It's not easy, But an easier thing to do would be to build that and then remove the two side blocks.
Yeah.
But it's still nightmarish.
Yeah. But like, there's a lot of ways you can hack this game to make it more tense from the get-go. But I enjoyed my time there. I think that the big thing for me is that if you wanted to play this as a one-shot where everyone died like 10 candles or was out of the game by the end, you would have to be like really pushing pulls very hard. Yeah. Because like we played for 3-4 hours.
Pushing pulls, baby.
We played for like 4 hours and we didn't topple the tower because, to be fair, we had some good pulls. Like there were some like real tipsy. And then afterwards, I think two more pulls and it went over.
Yeah.
So like it was like tense all the way through. But that was for one character to be out. If you wanted to try to get through a whole party worth of people, then you would have to really be going.
Yeah. And I definitely didn't push for the pulls as much.
Like, it wasn't that game.
We came in, and this is another thing. This is a very important thing about Dread and Tin Candles. You need to set a tone at the very beginning. And we came in with an energy that was
an energy
not that.
Of a lot of ADHD.
And I was just like, you know what? That's fine. We're going to be cool and easy breezy about today. And I, you know, I had fun. And but I know with the next time I run the Dread, I am going to be setting that tone the same way that I've done with 10 Candles and saying, hey, this is going to be a story about like death.
Yeah.
Like we're going to have a real rough time, and I want you to get in that headspace in advance. I'm going to really push that.
Why do you two like these things? Like Bloodborne, Dark Souls,
it's just
Dread.
Like what it's just stakes for me. For me, like I don't actually like Elden Ring and all those. Like I enjoyed playing with you, Shade, obviously. The story itself didn't really hook me as much.
I really want you to come back because they're getting ready to do a DLC where they have throw knife as the weapon.
Oh
yeah, that was like, cool. That's perfect for you.
Yeah. But like the thing for me is like I really like stories that give me a bittersweet feeling. It's like my favorite. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I like that a character that I love might not be there the whole way through. And I also love a story where like you're dealing with you're dealing with grays. You're not dealing with a black and white world. And a lot of like heroic games, like whether it's superheroes or even like Call of Duty and stuff like that, is very much like there is the good guys and there are the bad guys. And you go and you kill the bad guys and you win and the good guys win. And I like games that are a little bit more, you know, nuanced, I guess, when it comes to story specifically.
I definitely don't like this as a default for my game type. For sure. Like, I prefer the big damn hero aspect, but I do like melancholy.
You know what it is actually also is? And this is something which was a thing that I actually want to change about how we do Ico Nights, because this was something that popped into my head, and it goes back to the Session Zero stuff of being like, oh yeah, we should have done that. Is that I think that we should have tags on all of the quests that we propose and everything of like what they will include so people can like make decisions. Because there was a moment where my character, like, another thing about why I like darker things is that I can make bigger choices and not feel like I'm ruining people's fun. And like in this case, I had to be like, I'm not going to do this, even though I would. Like, or like, it would be like in the character, in the story of the character. I would have just been like, this kid is killing an entire building. And
I would have
turned
loved it. If you had done it.
Yeah, and so, but then I also know that like there are people at the table who don't like that sort of thing. And also like child, like even though it's a story, it's just like a weird gray area. And I was like, I don't want to touch that. But I think that with tags and stuff we could.
I had some thoughts on where, because that child was the monster at the end of the day. Like, it caused the problems. And you do have to... I thought about, what if you do this?
Yeah.
It wasn't you specifically that I was thinking, but I was just like, what if they decide that this kid needs to go?
Yeah, well, it's just
a
because...
a rational
like,
decision.
Yeah, my character is, like, a survivalist at its core. And also, like, a magician basically ruined his entire world.
Yeah.
And, like, that is what was
your
happening
character
here.
Your character is Roland Deschain.
And so I was, like, sort of, like, walked up, and I was like, this kid is doing this.
Yeah.
Like, I realized it, and I was like, if they are just scared of a book and can destroy this entire building's worth of lives, imagine later in life if they get mad or whatever. There's just like a whole thing, and I was just like, I wanted to just be like, I pull out my gun and I just do this.
I would have loved to have seen how Tibbity would react to that.
Yeah, but it was also like super dark, and I didn't want, like, because I know Jackie doesn't like that stuff either.
Um, I Because I remember
think Jackie would have been kind of okay with that.
I don't
like,
know.
She would have protested, but yeah. like she wouldn't go home feeling like, oh no, we killed a kid.
Yeah, exactly. But going back to like the big damn hero stuff yeah. is that I feel like sometimes those type of games can limit the type of story you tell yeah. because everyone is the big damn hero and there's like a specific way to go about this. We're not talking about Dread. I'm so sorry.
No, but like I'm, this well, is we are because we're talking about our experience.
Yeah, and so like. That was the big thing there, yeah. and that's why I think like having tags or a session zero conversation about the type of adventure these things are when they're chosen
yeah.
could make people have like an expectation going in to your point of tone
setting.
No, I think
that's great.
Because I agree that Dread is like, I think best played much like 10 Candles when it's like dark out, you have like a spooky
music on.
I'm going
to say this to just throw in, but like I personally, like I'm good for like a one-off. On those, yeah. like I could never play Dread or Ten Candles again,
no. yeah.
and I would be happy yeah. with my life because yeah. I don't like those dark, heavy choices.
Yeah,
I like the high octane, uber violence kind of fun. I'm a Borderlands.
Yeah,
like the death is like, oh, they died, and it's like, oh, it's funny.
Yeah,
it's the heroes don't have to deal with that.
Yeah,
and you know the thing about Dread that I actually think would be perfect is you walk into a game and you say, one of you is not going to be around by the end of this. Like, one of you is going to die. And it could be like an Uber Octane or whatever, but like, there is the shadow of there's going to be a consequence coming down sometime. I don't want it to be
That's
me.
How I enter most rooms.
But I think that like going off of the time it took to like pull, yeah. like it basically was one person would have went down. You
right.
know what I mean?
I mean, but again, that's, again, setting tone and Dread itself should be like 10 Candles where probably at the end of it, multiple, if not everyone, will go down.
Yeah.
You know what also be a great way to play this game? Because we were playing on a very like wide, sturdy table.
We were.
What if you
yeah.
got like a flimsy table?
Well, it's like was it's like 10 candles, where like if someone like speaks too loud and a candle goes out, that's the end of the scene.
Yeah.
Like that sort of thing. Like I think that you could do that, where it's just like a really wobbly table and everyone's sitting around.
Anyone for any reason that knocks that tower over, their character is out. That's yeah. how that game works.
Yeah.
And I do think that's a lot of fun. I went very soft with this because I chose we could have done this at my house where we had less room
yeah.
and the table would have is way more rickety.
You could have let your cats out.
And I could have let the cats out. Like any and
the cats
Pika,
die.
Pika could have
the
been
cats
there.
Are out. The cats characters are gone.
The last person the cat touched becomes responsible for the cat.
I was chosen by the cat. Oh, no.
You know, so there's a lot of things that we didn't quite do, but we got kind of close to. We did like an introductory.
Yeah.
And we're seasoned enough that we know how it would have gone.
Yeah.
And I will probably run 10 Candles again, and I will run Dread again, but both of them will be
different
keyed
feelings.
Towards, because I've now done 10 Candles twice, once with a, hey, you're all going to die, and once with a, hey, we're going to be a little softer on this. I want yeah. the...
And I will you know. Say that this game did have
soft
this
core masochism.
Yeah,
is Shade's new brand.
That's oh yeah. I don't disagree.
This is the thing is though that both of these games that I've experienced, because I've also run 10 Candles
yeah.
twice.
Yeah.
And I have played in it
four
twice.
Times.
Well, I've played in it yeah, twice and twice, then yeah, ran yeah. it twice. 10 Candles and Dread both can get long in the middle.
They can.
Yeah, and I don't know how, like, maybe it's just, like, inexperience of running them, but, like, I had a thing where I was running a 10 Candles, because we had maybe the perfect 10 Candles game the first time we
the
played.
The first time was,
it was
real good.
So good. And it was fast, and, like, yeah. every roll, like, something happened, you know? But, like, I played a 10 Candles game where it went, like, 4.5 hours,
yeah.
and 2 of those hours were just people rolling really well, and me having to stretch this story out. And so, like, that was hard for me, because I was like, damn, like, this is yeah. like not moving the way I thought it would, or like I structured it to. And I think Dread can do that too, because unless people are taking the story into their own hands and making pulls that are making the tower more unstable,
right?
Then you can play in a way that's like the optimal way, and you could have a really long middle of Dread.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's my biggest gripe is that like pacing would be tough sometimes depending on how you play it.
I mean like they talk about, hey, sometimes it's going to be awkward to write someone out of the story at this moment. Like,
yeah.
how did messing up that Latin translation actually kill this person
yeah.
or something? And, you know, that's a good section of the book. Definitely worth a read. Because,
I have an answer for that.
Please.
Resident Evil 3, sometimes Tyrant would just burst through a wall for no good reason.
Yeah.
And that could just be like, oh, you failed this. Nothing related to that, but also the roof
like
collapse.
You even succeed in translating it, but this thing comes through and kills you.
I love the idea of succeeding in translating it. You now know the information that everyone needs to know. You need to get this to them.
You turn
that's what happened to Hermione in Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
She got the translation, but toppled the tower and was out of the game.
Yeah. Thank you. I had to think about that for a second, but yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So why don't we talk in general sense of like, who we would recommend this for and whether you think that it's like a added to your collection sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or if it's just like you said, Rio, and I'm putting a little pressure on you, but like you said, I would be down if I never played this game again. That's fun, but you probably would not add this to your collection.
It would not be in my collection, but if someone's like, I want to really play Dread, I'd be like, oh, okay, I haven't played it in 6 months. I could
do it again. Yeah.
But it's not something like I would, like D&D, I'll play every week.
Yeah.
I like D&D, but Dread, if we had like a weekly Dread game, I would abandon you all.
What about you, Shade? What do you think?
You know, I am...
I'm not saying, I just wanted to specifically say it's not because of the game's development.
No, totally, totally.
It's just like the tone of those types of games are not my vibe.
Yeah, completely valuable insight there. I would say go for it. You know, borrow a copy, get it from your library. It's not that expensive. I think it was $20 or less.
Mm-hmm. And you probably get the PDF online for cheaper.
That's exactly what I did, yeah. And, you know, it is a game that I think you can have a lot of fun for. I personally view it as no more than 3 sessions kind of game.
Yeah, I think I agree. I like 10 Candles. I really liked this game.
Yeah.
I like 10 Candles a lot.
I like 10 Candles better.
I think 10 Candles is better. Yeah. Just because it has a little bit more nuance and it has a little bit more atmospheric built into it.
I think the atmosphere is harder to build in Dread because you kind of need to be able to see the tower.
Yeah.
Which means you got to have a light on, which means you're not going to have that dark spookiness. Like the 10 Candles... That's built in.
Yeah.
You need to have the lights off, and you've just got the light of the candles.
Yeah.
Also, playing it in a strange place you've never been before, with it getting darker and darker, good tone, good vibe.
I think every now and then about me slamming that table and all of you jumping and the joy that brought me in that
Shade
moment.
Shade loves a Foley effect live during a game. Like there's
he loves Foley.
There's like the recent one of like the knocking on the elevator door and you just like produced a frying pan or whatever it was.
It started knocking on it because it was a metal door.
I do love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that this is, I would say, I would add this to my collection just because I think it could be great as a social thing too, like in-between episode. Like we've talked about having sort of like episodes in between arcs. Doing it in Dread and using it as sort of like you pull every time an hour passes or something, you have a certain amount of time to do something. Like you could use this. I like this mechanic a lot.
I like that idea. And this is, I know Franco would say the same if he wasn't imprisoned currently.
We had to trade him in to get Shade out.
You know what?
We did an exchange.
You could say I framed him, but did I?
I mean, you're here. He's there.
The people made a decision. Anyway, no, I know he would say put a timer on everything.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think would help here. Like a little sand timer would be nice for this game.
You know what you could do as well? Is that you could have it as the GM symbolizing like an environmental thing of like everyone's talking. Because Rio, you talk all the time about people like just like talking themselves in circles or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine being a GM, you like in person, they're talking. You get up and you just go and you do a poll and you put it down. And then like, then everyone's like, something's happening. Like this, like we have time, but we don't have forever. You know what I mean?
And then you have a dice with that as well, so that if you fuck it up and knock it over, you just pulled that.
Oh,
I'm gonna roll a dice.
Yeah.
Which one of that screw you?
So to build on that, because you have a 10-minute timer, and every 10 minutes, the GM is going to pull from that Jenga tower.
I like that.
Yeah.
But if someone makes a decision, every time someone pulls, you reset the timer.
Yeah.
Oh, Rio.
I like it.
Yeah.
I love that. That's very good.
That's a really good way to keep it moving. I think that's like solves for a lot. I also like this as a, like, here's the thing.
I think that Dredd has a really great idea for a mechanic. Mm-hmm. The whole game, like you said, Rio, I don't know if I would play a Dredd game every single week or whatever. It doesn't have enough there to keep me going. But I love this mechanic so much, and it can be used so fluidly. Like, what a great way to use, like, magic.
The tower has to be a solid block.
You're so right. I'm so sorry.
I don't know how you would do that.
But, like, what a great way to, if you have a campaign where magic has become super unstable, every time someone uses magic, they have to pull from a tower.
That's a lot of fun.
And when it falls, magic backfires somehow, like there's just like a lot of cool ways you could use this mechanic.
Replace your,
spell slots.
5e players, 5e players, replace your wild magic sorcerer dice rolls with this.
No, you know what you could do? Oh my God. You could make spell slots how many things you have to pull.
Oh my gosh.
So like a 9th level spell you can use once, but you have to pull like 9.
Yeah.
And that's going to be tough. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's big. You can't just keep spamming wish or whatever. But like if you have fireball, that's 5. Like fireball is already kind of a volatile spell, but you also have to pull 5 from this. And then if something falls, that maybe explodes in your hand as you're casting it. Like this is a great mechanic, guys. Yeah. I love the Jenga tower.
Yeah. It is a great mechanic. And it is a good game.
I saw that one player had a Jenga tower next to them the whole time.
Just like, hey guys, I kind of hacked this. It's a house rule of mine. I have my tower. I love that.
Yeah, I think that's 2 for definitely buy and 1 for
yeah. Not in your collection. I would say that like if I had a choice between a TTRPG that I was gonna like was super interested in like 10 Candles or something like that. Or Dredd, I might go with the other one just because it has a little bit more meat on its bones. And so I know that I would use it more. And like you said, Shade, I think the ideal version of the way you get into this is that someone's like, I read it, I understand it, and I'm giving it to you now. So mm-hmm. like, enjoy. And then you pass it on when you're done because really it needs like a read through, and then you're like, I got this.
And I should have mentioned, I just found at the end of the PDF, winner of the 2006 Gold Innie for Innovation.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, it
is innovative as fuck. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like a cool, like, it does character creation interestingly. I just think that I love this tower mechanic, and maybe that would wear off, but for right now, it's definitely, I would put it in my collection.
Yeah.
All right, everyone, that is our review of Dredd. If you enjoyed this, let us know what TTRPGs you want us to play so that we can talk about it on the podcast. Also, if you want to support the podcast in any way, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/tabletopped. We drop a monthly episode of a podcast called Wild Magic where we just talk about the stuff that adds a little magic into our lives. We also have a lot of other stuff in there, like game modules that we're going to be dropping, mechanics, all the stuff that we're interested in making. But also we have stuff like bonus episodes that I made when I was still young and stupid and learning how to podcast.
Yeah, you're still stupid.
Yeah, still stupid after all these years. go check it out. You can join for as little as $1, but you can also join as a free member and get a little bit of content there as well. All right, everyone, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.